president and other federal officials from accepting money or gifts from foreign governments without congressional approval. Democrats warned that the total figure is likely larger, given that Republicans took control of the committee last year and halted the investigation. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 38 degrees and partly cloudy. In New York City, 34 degrees with fair skies. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns. Thanks for listening.
In Washington and all points beyond. This is Oscar Fernandez, and you're listening to the best of the Latino Media Collective 2023, the year in review. We are going to cover a series of stories that we covered on this show in particular. And to do so, we have one of our favorite guests on the show that we've had several times during the course of the year is freelance writer Arturo Dominguez. Arturo, welcome back. And, you know, hope you and your family are safe during this holiday season.
Yeah, likewise, man. Thanks for having me on. It's always fun. I enjoy the show.
Absolutely. And 2023 started off with a bang because one of the first things that happened this year, I'll tell you this, while I was out of the country, you know, was the insurrection attempt that took place in Brazil almost like on the 2nd or 3rd of January. And right there, as a radio producer and as a host of the show, I thought to myself, oh man, this is going to be a long year. And then other things happen in places like Peru and Guatemala that we'll get to maybe during the course of the show. But considering some of the things that we talked about in the show this year, during the course of the year, one of the things I want to focus on is some things that, you know, just came up constantly during the course of the year. And one thing that came to mind that I wanted to talk to you about is what I feel continues to be this anti-LGBTQ legislation that we've seen in one state after another, in obvious places like Florida and Texas, less obvious places like, you know, North and South Dakota, so on and so forth. And it was just nothing short of shocking that the Republican Party and many acquiescent politicians are sort of trying to legislate LGBTQ people out of existence. particularly trans people. And, you know, one of the ways that it started was in Florida, almost at the beginning of the year, with none other than Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, you know, when he was trying to block AP African American studies. In his famous speech back in January, he made it a point on, you know, pointing out Black queer theory with regards to one of the reasons why he was trying to reimagine and rechange and distort, let's just say for what it is, distort public education in the state of Florida. You know, one of the shows that I do over the years on the show is this small series called Undocumented and LGBTQ. Unfortunately, I couldn't get to do one of those shows because it seemed like every week there was this new anti-LGBTQ legislation happening in this state, and then the next state, and then the following state, just basically copycatting each other. So my question to you, how do you look about this, you know, in hindsight, looking at the whole of this year? Because I start with Florida, not just because you're from Florida, but also because I think this whole anti-LGBTQ legislation also ties to the importance of education with regards to, you know, how the changing demographics of this country lends itself to this sort of thing, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, a lot of this legislation, I look at it from a fear perspective. It's really a scary thing. And, you know, not many people know this about me, but I'm the father of a trans kid. Well, they're an adult now. And she moved out of the state because of anti-trans laws. And it sucks because it kind of breaks up our family. And, you know, a lot of us have ties here. You know, I've got my parents and work and grandkids and things like that. So, you know, it was a really tough decision on our whole family, having to separate like that. But, you know, I keep watching things and, you know, the reason I don't mention, I rarely mention that I'm the father of a trans kid is, I'm already targeted, you know, hate groups, things like that. The last thing I want is to like put a bullseye on my family. So I don't mention it because of the fear. And then when the rhetoric that goes around putting these laws in place, trying to justify it, the outright bigotry, things like that, that creates hate out in the real world. So for my kids and stuff, like, it's extremely scary. I think there was something, like, I was reading something earlier today that there was like 21 anti-trans laws passed this year across the country. And most of those are transition related. They're, you know, they limit like any kind of transition stuff for minors. They're banning, you know, trans student athletes and from participating in school sports. That, like you mentioned, and the Don't Say Gay bill, they're limiting, education on the issue. Other states are restricting the use of pronouns that aren't in line with, you know, your birth gender, birth sex. Then there's a restriction, bathroom restrictions, things like that. It's interesting how they also take like drag and immediately associate that with trans life.
Yeah.
You know, with being transgender. When, you know, drag at the end of the day, and not to be too candid, but it's just a bunch of dudes, entertainers, man. And like, to me, drag shows are entertainment. They're fun. You know, like, I have like gay friends and stuff, and I have friends that do drag, and it's like, it's not the same as being trans, not even close. And the other thing that really bothers me about a lot of this rhetoric is that it now revolves a lot around sexually assaulting minors, when the two are not related. You know what I mean? Like, there's some people I follow that have been tracking data for this whole year. It's called, you go to Who's Making News, .org, I believe it is. It's .org. And I think it's like maybe three people out of the thousands of sexual assault cases this year were trans. So it's like, I don't know, 1,000th of a percent. And none are drag queens. So this whole thing about drag queen story hour and indoctrinating our kids and making it sexual, you have to wonder about the people who are making it sexual. Because to me, it's not sexual.
Exactly. And one of the people who made a point of that was Zoe Zephyr, who's a representative in the state of Montana. And she ended up getting censured and silenced in Montana as they were passing their own version of anti-trans laws during the course of this year. So this is precisely why I told you that one of the reasons why I couldn't do a undocumented and LGBTQ episode this year was because at a certain point, it was so hard to keep up with all the anti-trans, anti-LGBTQ legislation because it really literally felt like it was happening week to week. And let's not beat around the bush here. And I think you sort of crystallized it that all of this is based on fear and hate of the other. And in this case, it's the LGBTQ community. No doubt about it. Because, again, all these things only lead to the conclusion that the Republicans are trying to legislate LGBTQ people out of existence altogether. Now, speaking of hate and fear of the other, that sort of segues into the continued issue of mass shootings here in the U.S. And one of the things that sort of tied that to mass shootings, the LGBTQ issue, was what took place in Nashville, for instance, a school shooting that happened there. And all these, you know, conspiracy theories, rumors, and innuendo that the shooter was not only female, but maybe LGBTQ as well. That's sort of beside the point. The issue here is regards to guns, because we certainly saw a lot of this happening in Texas this year, but in various different forms. So, for example, there was the incident in Allen, Texas, where you had essentially a Latino fascist, a Latino Nazi, wearing LADS on his arm and killed several people in Allen, Texas. You had another incident in Cleveland, Texas, where there was a mass shooting of a neighbor shooting several of his own neighbors and then fleeing. And during the course of that particular tragedy, Texas Governor Greg Abbott actually referred to the victims of the crimes as illegals. His words, not mine. And just another example of how, you know, the governor over there sort of criminalizes the victims in states like Texas. But nonetheless, the issue is still the issue of guns, because even now, you know, it's been almost a year and a half since the Uvalde tragedy, and that case is still not closed because of the incompetence of law enforcement and a whole series of other issues that have come out and that continue to come out, you know, months, almost a year and a half afterwards. You know, this is sort of frustrating, but it's something that, you know, so long as the people in charge in states like Florida and Texas continue to bury their head in the sand is something that you and I, as the general public, will still have to contend with.
Yeah, you know, Uvalde, you know, it's an interesting segue to go from the anti-trans stuff to this because, you know, obviously, I think it was, like you mentioned, Nashville, but in Uvalde, at one point, they were claiming that the shooter was a trans leftist, you know. Yeah, that turned out to not be true.
Early on, yeah.
Right. So like there's that rhetoric that, again, you know, the same thing that Abbott did by referring to the victims of that mass shooting in Cleveland as illegals, you know, you're essentially murdering the victims twice. You know, they're already dead, right? They've been murdered. And then you go on the news and you refer to them as in a derogatory way and, you know, using basically racist language, you're doing further damage. You know, you're killing them again. It's no different than, you know, when police kill somebody and the news comes out and wants to tell you all about that person's criminal record, almost as if to try to justify it, right? Forget that he was unarmed. Forget all these other facts. look at this criminal record. You're essentially killing that person twice. Because there won't be any justice, or the justice won't be as swift, or, you know, it's that kind of rhetoric. Again, it translates to what happens in the street, and what happens in the street inevitably at some point in time becomes another mass shooting. So, you know, you hear the rhetoric our politicians use, just like with the El Paso shooting that killed 22 people, I believe it was. That guy echoed Donald Trump almost 100% in his manifesto. All these guys do, the guy in Buffalo, you know, echoed politicians and in his manifesto. And that stuff, you know, whether it's anti-trans, whether it's xenophobia, Latinophobia, or anti-Semitism or Islamophobia, it all generates from a place of people that are perceived as leaders, and that does more to spread it than it does than anything else.
Even as we have this conversation right now, you know, the latest thing with Trump, you know, using very fascist words with regards to migrants or just generally people from Africa and Asia, you know, it's the latest round, not just the latest round of fascist rhetoric from Trump, but essentially, he's at this point, we could say that he's just repeating some of the things that mass shooters have said in the past.
Yeah, you know, Trump's recent comment about poisoning the blood of the nation, I mean, he said that in October, you know, and he's, you know, people are saying, you know, you can't talk like that. You shouldn't say things like that. And he does it anyway, because it riles up his base, you know, a lot of white racists, you know, that's where his biggest support is right now. And I have a hard time with particularly Latinos that support a guy who wants to put people in camps, who wants to, you know, do this expedited removal process that they're talking about in Congress. That's another story, but,
yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things that I failed to like cover for this show, but I would love to talk to you right now, is Univision's interview with Donald Trump last month.
Oh
my goodness. You know, considering now that this latest controversy of, you know, poisoning the blood of the people, or whatever the comment was, it makes that interview that Univision did last month even worse. And this is coming at a time where they're merging or have merged already with Televisa, which is another big media conglomerate that has its own shady history in and of itself in the past, particularly in the late 60s and early 70s. But my goodness, you want to talk about, you know, Latinos supporting rhetoric like that. I cannot, under my own principles, this is why I do the work that I do on WPFW, because under no circumstances can I work for an organization that would think that it's okay to not only let somebody like Trump on the air and say what he says, considering everything they're saying this month makes that last interview in November even worse, but the interview itself in Univision was just as awful and problematic in and of itself. And it's a far cry from when they were defending Jorge Ramos, you know, in the initial years of Trump's presidency. It's just mind-boggling to me, but I guess it's business, I guess.
Right, you know, that whole interview, and I don't know if you can refer to Univision as state-run media, but I mean, that's what it felt like. It was softball questions, no pushback, no fact-checking, no nothing. They just let him go, and like I said, softball, it was so simple, so easy, and like you, I could never in good conscience work for a company like that. And I already have enough issues with, you know, major media as it is in a lot of respects. Right. So like, you know, I don't know that I could work at an NBC, let alone something like that. I mean, that's just, and I understand some people quit. Some people high up in, man, I can't remember who exactly it was, but yeah, that was the whole thing. And, you know, when we talk about Trump saying that immigrants are poisoning the blood of the nation, I posted something on Twitter last night, and someone in my comments and my replies was saying that they didn't see that on Spanish language news. Like, they didn't mention that Trump said that. And I was like, really? Because he said it twice. He said it in October, because I wrote about it then, and then I wrote about it again yesterday. And they were like, yeah, no, we didn't see that. I'm like, I guess it's up to us, you know, to make sure you guys hear it. So I posted a TikTok in Spanish, you know, trying to explain that. It's weird, man.
Yeah, it was Leon Krause is the
anchor. That's what it was.
Yeah, that's the Univision anchor who left in protest over after the Trump interview on Univision. And even Jorge Ramos, who, as far as I know, is still with Univision. You just mentioned Univision as state media. He actually questioned the independence of Univision after that interview as well. Because, again, it was essentially a puff piece. And if there was anyone in corporate media that would have a better understanding of, you know, U.S.'s historic relationship with Latin America, you know, it would be Univision. And for this to happen just goes to show you something that I've told the audience at WPFW for many years, is that the same arguments and grievances that people like you and I have with regards to corporate media in English, the same can be applied to corporate media in Spanish. And it's showing itself in ways that we could never imagine. Because, by the way, this whole interview that we're talking about was in English. It was conducted in English. Anyone can go on YouTube and look it up. But again, it's essentially a puff piece. And so it's quite infuriating, and it would be interesting to see where Univision is going to go in the coming weeks and months ahead as the new year approaches. Now, you mentioned in passing the issue of Islamophobia, and I want to talk about that a little bit more, because we did a show here on the Latino Media Collective several weeks ago with regards to the Palestinian diaspora in Chile. Now, there is a large Palestinian diaspora throughout Latin America. It predates the Nakba of 75 years ago, and it goes back all the way to the late 1800s. And one of the things that I see the current, you know, situation in Gaza, and I have to say that as we record this conversation today, the death toll in Gaza is up to like 20,000, which is just sad and shocking, to say the least. But I continue to look at this whole situation as the cause and consequences of colonialism. And not just colonialism from one or two centuries ago, but in recent times, because, again, you know, there's a lot of demonization of Palestinians. But I want to reiterate something I said several weeks ago when we did the show on the Palestinian diaspora in Chile, is that once upon a time, the FMLN in El Salvador was considered a terrorist organization. Once upon a time, the ANC of South Africa, the same ANC as Nelson Mandela, was considered a terrorist organization. Even places as far off as East Timor, Fretilin was considered a terrorist organization by Indonesia when they were controlling East Timor back in the 70s, 80s, and in large part for the 90s. At one point or another, all those organizations I mentioned became internationally recognized political parties. Even in Colombia, with Gustavo Petro, who is part of the ELN, the ELN is still considered a terrorist organization by the U.S. at this time. The point I'm trying to make here, and I'm going to ask you a question here shortly, is that, you know, when it comes to colonialism, in an imperfect world, there is no such thing as a perfect resistance movement. It doesn't exist. And by that, I'm referring to Hamas. It's not a perfect organization. You know, the heinous acts that happened in October clearly show that. But in an imperfect world, there is no such thing as the perfect resistance movement. And truth be told, you know, Palestinians are under no obligation to present to Israel the perfect resistance movement. It doesn't exist, and even if it did, it's quite clear that this particular Israeli government has no interest in negotiations or let alone peace. We've seen that clearly by the high death toll. So, again, I want to ask you this, you know, because I said a lot right there, is like, Do you see this as well as the cause and consequences of colonialism? People always put up religion, but I don't put too much focus on the religious aspect here. This is, to me, the story of colonialism, no different from Native Americans from one or two centuries ago. What are your thoughts?
You know, I have to agree with you on that because, you know, you hear a lot of the conspiracy theories of, you know, Jews are controlling the world, blah, blah, right? And I don't buy into any of that because, you know, there are a lot of people, Mayorkas from DHS, Lincoln at State, you know, they're white Europeans, right? And you'd look at them, you'd think white Europeans. Mayorkas is Cuban. His grandmother, I believe it was like an Ashkenazi Jew from Europe. He's not a practicing Jew or anything like that, but he's considered Jewish. I don't consider that guy Jewish. I consider him a Cuban, right? Maybe a white dude. Blinken is a white dude to me. Joe Biden, a white dude who claims to be a Zionist. So, you know, you have all these people in power that aren't necessarily Jewish, but are 100% Zionist. They're backing a political warlike movement. That's what Zionism is. Like, it's not, Zionism and Judaism are two different things, you know? So that's why there's so many Jews that are anti-Zionist, because they don't believe in that colonialist type of aspect. Like, sure, you know, and I get it when you talk to Jews that are anti-Zionist, like, sure, I can see why Jewish people would want to have some sort of connection in Palestine. But it doesn't have to be taken by force. You know, during the Ottoman Empire, whatever, you had Arabs, you had Christians, you had Muslims, you know, Jewish people, everybody living in relative peace, right? Obviously, you had some beef here and there, but it was that way for a very long time. 1948 comes around, and now you have what we have here. So, you know, people want to go back in history thousands of years. That's fine. That's a conversation that maybe needs to be had. But in the context of what's happening right now, I don't think it's a conversation that, because you start getting into the religious aspect of it. And historically, religion has always been used as a weapon in situations like this.
Yeah. And I hate to cut you off there, but even Gustavo Petro, who I just mentioned of Colombia, said something to the same extent, that he's seeing this through the lens of colonialism, not through religious ideology at all whatsoever.
Right.
And several other countries in Latin America have said things to the same extent. Not all of them, of course. Some right-wing governments like that of Nayib Bukele in El Salvador have said some particularly nasty and racist things about Palestinian people, even though Nayib Bukele is Palestinian, of Palestinian descent himself, which is quite ironic,
right?
But continue.
No, yeah, you know, and that's inherent, seems like an inherent Islamophobic mentality that exists in the West in general. It's not such a big deal in Latin America, and anti-Semitism probably isn't as big of a deal as it is in the U.S., you know, but it's almost like it's trendy to be Islamophobic. And I think it's been that way since 9/11.
Yeah, you can make a whole career being Islamophobic on CNN or MSNBC, and certainly on Fox News. You can have a six-figure salary, you know, being Islamophobic on those sort of outlets. So I'm speaking with freelance writer Arturo Dominguez, and we're reviewing some of the big stories of this year. This is the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. This is the year in review on the Latino Media Collective. We're going to talk about more about the summer of labor strikes, busing migrants, and Republican plans to invade Mexico, which, again, is just insane in and of itself. But all that coming up. Back with more in a minute. Stay tuned.
energy source, the cosmic force with prodigy, dripping astrology. My intellect's the power with diesel power.
That was Prodigy, and you're listening to Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington. Reminding everyone that you also follow us on latinomediacollective.com. You can also follow us on Twitter under the name at LMC underscore show. That is at LMC underscore show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and this is the best of 2023 year in review here in the Latino Media Collective, and we're joined today by freelance writer Arturo Dominguez. So we hit some heavy stuff at the first half of the show, Arturo, but it's not all doom and gloom this year. If anything, this has been the year of inspiration, you know, considering everything that's happened in other parts of the world. When it comes to labor, it's been a very inspiring time. And it actually started earlier this year when around, you know, February and March, the teachers in L.A. County went on strike for 2 or 3 weeks and won their grievances for better pay and for better working conditions, along with better pensions and health insurance as well. That was just the beginning of what was to come during the summer. So in early May was the Hollywood writer strike, which was not only pushing back against, you know, low wages, but also pushing back with regards to the issue of artificial intelligence and how such technology may put writers out of business. And they fought tooth and nail to make sure that they could push back, you know, the dark cloud of AI in regards to making television shows and movies as well. That was followed by the actor strike, which lasted about close to 3 to 4 months as well. In addition to that, some other strikes came sort of under the radar. So hotel workers in LA went on strike as well for, again, better working conditions, better pay, and better protections for employees as well. One of the biggest strikes that took place this year was the United Auto Workers. That lasted several months, and that actually caught the attention of the Biden administration to even force them to support the United Auto Workers strike as well, which is quite astounding. And you would be hard pressed to find any other president in history to support a union strike in that manner. And they eventually won their grievances as well. My point is this, so Arturo, is that, you know, again, despite all the doom and gloomy stuff that we mentioned at the first half of the show, there is some degree of inspiration that we should take from all these things with regards to these strikes that happen, and the ones that almost happened as well, because UPS was going to go on strike as well, which would have been chaos for the holiday season, to say the least. But my question to you is that I feel like this is more of the beginning of something rather than the culmination of all these labor strikes. I think this has, at the very least, awakened the body politics of workers in whatever industry to the power that they possess that they probably were not aware of. And this may be a greater issue coming in 2024 as this presidential election looms, you know, almost a year from now. So I feel like it's the beginning of something instead of the culmination.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I knew we were going to cover this, and I was out of curiosity. I was wondering how many actual strikes there were this year. So I looked it up, and between January 1st and November 30th, there were 393 in the U.S. involving more than 500,000 workers. And then another statistic that got me off guard was the first quarter of 2023, union represented workers saw an average of a 7% wage hike in the first year of their contracts. And that's the biggest wage hike in a single quarter since 2007. And I thought, yeah, that's where it's at. And I'm with you. I think this is the beginning of something that could be a lot bigger. I mean, when you look at the numbers and you take the whole last year, put them together, that's the closest thing to a general strike you probably ever see in this country, and I know it's, 500,000 workers doesn't sound like a lot, but it's enough to make a dent for sure. When you can, like the auto workers and even the writers and actors, like when you can cripple an industry with what doesn't seem like a large, massive number in the grand scheme of things, it says a lot. And it's definitely, like you were saying, it's inspiring. And, this is a good thing to highlight at the end of a year, as we're coming into a new year, because that's proof that like protests work, direct action works, being loud and making sure your voice is heard in a communal sense, like as a community, like what unions represent. I think that's a huge deal. I think that's a really big deal. Wasn't it the Washington Post journalist went on a one-day strike not too long ago, and that sent shockwaves through the upper management at the Post. So just doing one-day strikes and things like that, can make a big difference. And again, it's definitely inspiring. Definitely inspiring.
Not only that, but the general public was supportive of all these strikes in one form or another, right, as well as they were happening. And I have to say that, recognizing the power of labor rights and the power of labor itself collectively is sorely needed right now, because that would give people the power and the opportunity to support other workers in more vulnerable industries. So, for example, one story that came up earlier this year was the use of migrant child labor in the meatpacking industry out in places like Iowa, Nebraska, Indiana, places where children were being used as labor in very dangerous places that hold sharp weapons, dangerous machinery, guillotines. That's the meatpacking industry. And so if there are labor victories in those places, then maybe there'll be more strength and support in those more vulnerable industries where people need our help the most, because it is migrant exploitation. And unfortunately, migrant exploitation is still going on at this time. Obviously, we mentioned Governor Greg Abbott and some of the series of xenophobic, anti-immigrant things that he's done. And we've had you on the show several times to discuss these things. And one of those things was another migrant flight stunt, this time sending migrants from Venezuela to Sacramento, California, of all places. And it just goes to show you, we just have to remind ourselves that, these political stunts, because that's all they are, these political stunts could have dangerous consequences. It's been almost a year now since we had a stunt here in Washington where, migrants were bused to Vice President Kamala Harris' house in one of the coldest nights here in Washington. And somebody could have really gotten hurt, if there wasn't people supporting or people out of the kindness of their heart helping out migrants during that time. And fortunately, there were supportive people in places like Sacramento. But again, this form of migrant exploitation is still going on right now. And it's nothing short of frustrating that those governors involved in those particular schemes have not been held accountable in any way, shape, or form, any meaningful way at all.
Right. First of all, shout out to all the towns, Martha's Vineyard and, Sacramento, all the people who came together in a time of crisis, you know, without any kind of warning or heads up, to help try to take care of vulnerable people like that. You know, we heard a lot during the Trump administration, the phrase of cruelty is the point. And for Republicans, it still is. You know, from Ron DeSantis to especially Greg Abbott, I think just recently they came out and said that the Texas has shipped 75,500 migrants to other cities, to six other cities. The governor's office said this, and that's since April. So not even really a year. The issue is that not that these cities can't take them in, it's that they're being sent without any warning, without any coordination, without anything. And again, like you said, how they're being used as political pawns, these are actual human beings, and there could be dire consequences. A lot of them are children, despite what, you know, the whole thing right now on social media is military-aged men are coming across the border, right? And I looked this up and debunked some of it, and it's still 51% are women and girls.
Precisely. So I want to take that opportunity to give a shout-out to NorCal Resist, which is an organization based in Sacramento, California, that fought the good fight and helped out these migrants when they were used in this political stunt, and also the Lawyers for Civil Rights in Boston, who helped out migrants in the Martha's Vineyard incident that took place last year as well. These are the type of grassroots organizations that fight the good fight with not only helping out migrants, but also trying to the best of their ability hold those governors who took part in the stunt accountable in some way, shape, or form. And so, my goodness, you know, I want to talk about this with you with as part of our end of year review. Is this call by Republicans to possibly invade Mexico if Donald Trump were to, you know, return to power? And I want to emphasize Republicans, because this is an idea that's not exclusive to Donald Trump, the individual. This is something that at this point in time is being floated by several Republicans over the course of this year. You know, it started with Trump, but it didn't end with Trump at all whatsoever. I mean, one of the basis for this idea of invading Mexico is because of the opioid crisis and fentanyl. But we have to remind the audience sort of this funny story that took place in San Jose, California, of the head of the police union who was caught smuggling fentanyl into the country in places like Indonesia, Singapore, places like that, other places other than south of the border. But that's irrelevant. The goal here now is that if Donald Trump were to become president again, this is something that's seriously being pushed. In fact, Rolling Stone magazine, you know, revealed that Trump, you know, asked his advisors for plans, actual written plans to invade Mexico. And this is all way before, you know, recent rhetoric that he's made in the past weeks with regards to immigrants as well. So again, I want to reiterate, this is not exclusive to Donald Trump, the individual. It shows the Republican Party, you know, where they are with regards to migrants, where they are with regards to people of color, where they are with regards to the other, whoever the other may be. And it doesn't even take into account the economic lunacy of doing such a thing. Next door, I mean, I don't know where to begin, but go ahead. What do you think about this?
Well, you know, it started with Donald Trump, and then Ron DeSantis mentioned it, I believe, in a debate.
Yeah.
And then Vivek Ramaswamy has mentioned it.
Yeah.
Nikki Haley has mentioned it.
Yeah.
Chris Christie has brought it up. And then in Congress, there's a handful there, too. And granted, it's a landmine issue. So a lot of Republicans are staying away from it for good reason. But, you know, it's built on the rhetoric about the cartels being, you know, foreign terrorist groups and blah, 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 right? But at the end of the day, they're not addressing how, since AMLO took office, especially in the last 2 years, you know, Mexico has been like an all-out war with these cartels trying to take them out. And they've made they've made dents here and there. And, you know, cartels are to Mexico what organized crime is to us, right? It's the same thing. We just use different language. You know, other countries have secret police. We have undercover cops, the same thing, right? So, you know, they're not addressing how Mexico is actively trying to tackle the situation, working on deals with other countries to try to stop the flow of things. But, you know, there's only so much you can do when the demand is there. And there's only so much you can do when Americans are the ones bringing the fentanyl and the stuff across the border.
Yeah, let's remember the late, great journalist Gary Webb, who wrote the Dark Alliance feature in the San Jose Mercury News back in the 90s, which chronicled how, you know, the CIA was the one that brought drugs into places like Los Angeles during the 1980s and many other metropolitan areas like Washington, like New York, all these inner cities that became, you know, the caricatures of drug-infested cities that Republicans still use even to this day, especially in places like Chicago. So I'll tell you this. I heard this one Republican over the week responding to, you know, Donald Trump's racist rhetoric with regards to immigrants. And this person said something to the effect that, oh, Donald Trump is just running, you know, his own playbook with regards to, you know, his own brand of fascism. And look, when it comes to Republicans, the playbook analogy doesn't really work, because if he's executing a playbook that is going to succeed, that means, that sort of implies that he has the personnel in place to make that happen. And the personnel in question here is the entire Republican Party, as far as I'm concerned. So the playbook analogy, you know, doesn't work the way they think it does, because then it would cause for a little bit of self-reflection on their part. So look, Arturo, we're almost out of time, but I want to give you this moment to say if there are any other stories that we should probably point out that also deserve our attention. There's so many, because we had you on the show so many times this year. You know, we could go on and on with regards to other things, with regards to Texas, but, you know, are there any other issues that you want to bring to mind? I know I have plenty with regards to international stuff like Peru, Brazil, Guatemala, you know, the list goes on and on. But, you know, as we close out this 2023, what else do you want people to remember with regards to 2023?
Well, I guess is another story that I covered a week or so ago was Cuba uncovering terrorist plots against the country. When I read through the stuff that they provided and they published, I was both surprised and not surprised that I have been tracking some of the same people they mentioned on their list for over a year. Because when, you know, you start following extremists and then you have some Cubans in the Proud Boys, you know, Enrique Tarrio, stuff like that, eventually they end up bleeding together. And some of the extremists that I was tracking with relation to hate groups here in the U.S. happened to be Cubans that were plotting a terrorist attack against. So suddenly a lot of things that I've been tracking made a whole lot of sense. And I spent a couple of days going through what Cuba offered, what I had, put it together. And I was like, oh my God, like they are so busted. But it's not like, anybody here is going to do anything, right? The feds aren't going to do anything. And then, you know, the way Republicans are ending the year right now with withholding funding to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, the war funding, along with, yeah, I don't know how many billions of dollars for the border. They're withholding all that and using migrant rights as hostage. They want to take away the use of certain parts of credible fear for seeking asylum. They want an expedited removal process like what Trump had. They want like a permanent Title 42 type of policy put in place. And those last two, apparently, the White House seems to be entertaining. And that's what's scary about this whole thing, is that they're tying xenophobic policy ideas to funding for war, and they're framing it as border security when border security is included in that war funding already. And it's scary because if the Republicans have any sort of a victory, this is temporary funding for Ukraine. So when it comes back up, What other rights are they going to try to take? Who are they going to put on that list? Are they going to try to take more immigrant rights? Are they going to come after the LGBTQ community? Are they going to come after voting rights? Like, it's insane that Democrats are entertaining Republican ideas here. You know, John Fetterman's been vocal about it. Schumer's been in negotiations. The White House is involved. It's a really kind of a shocking way to end the year, that we're talking about taking away human rights from immigrants for war funding.
Yeah, and for people like me, it leads me to question what makes Biden any different from Trump when it comes to immigration policy as well. It's interesting that you mentioned Enrique Tarrio, because the first episode we did this year was on, you know, machismo and this specter of machismo in organizations like the Proud Boys, expressed by people like Enrique Tarrio. So we've come full circle on 2023. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. And I'm glad that you were on the show today. So we've been speaking with freelance writer Arturo Dominguez. You can rest assured that we're going to have him on the show several more times during the course of 2024. But in the meantime, thank you very much for being on the show, and hope you have a safe holiday as well, Arturo.
You too, man. I appreciate the time. And this was a fun recap. You made me look back on the year, how many times I've been on the show and what we discussed. And it's been a great year. It really has.
Yeah, it's tough, but great. But we have to fight the good fight as we move into the new year as well. So with that said, that is it for today's show. That is a wrap for 2023 on the Latino Media Collective. We want to thank everyone who supported the show during the course of the year. We really appreciate it. It's been a tough year, but we intend to fight the good fight coming up in 2024. But in the meantime, we hope everyone has a safe holiday during this time. And the next new episode that you hear will be in 2024, and we'll continue to struggle for social justice throughout the airwaves. So in the meantime, this is Oscar Fernandez saying thank you very much, everyone, for listening to the show. That's it for today's show. Adios. Nos vemos. Ciao.
District Collective starts the new year with their inaugural Creators Super Jam. The Super Jam brings top rappers, singers, and beatmakers from the DMV to the Atlas Performing Arts Center for an evening of original songs and jams that I'm sure that you enjoy. The show begins at 7 p.m. For tickets and more info, go to atlasarts.org. That's Tuesday, January 9th, at the Atlas Performing Arts Center on 8th Street Northeast. See you at the Super Jam.
For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns with some brief news headlines. Funerals were held in Iran today for the victims of a terrorist attack earlier this week in which two explosions tore through crowds commemorating an assassinated Iranian general. Nearly 100 people were killed in the attack, and nearly 300 others were injured. An Iranian official said on state TV that a group of suspects had been arrested. Responsibility for the attack was claimed by the Islamic State group, which, as a Sunni extremist organization, is opposed to the Shia Iranian government. IS has attacked Iran on multiple previous occasions, including a 2022 bombing of a Shiite shrine that killed 15 people. The Iraqi government is taking steps to begin closing down the U.S.-led military coalition in the country after a U.S. strike killed a militia leader in Baghdad yesterday. In a statement, the office of Prime Minister Mohammed Shia al-Sudani said a newly formed committee would create, quote, arrangements to end the presence of the international coalition forces in Iraq permanently, end quote. The Pentagon said its strike yesterday was in retaliation against recent attacks on U.S. personnel in the region. The strike killed the leader of one of Iraq's many Iran-backed militias, which helped propel Prime Minister Sudani to power last year. The U.S.-led coalition says its purpose is to help prevent a resurgence of the Islamic State group. In domestic news, the U.S. economy added an unexpectedly high 216,000 jobs last month, and the unemployment rate remained at a low 3.7%. Average hourly wages were up 4.1% in December compared to a year earlier. The data suggests a resilient labor market, which could tamp down expectations of a Federal Reserve interest rate cut next year. Economic theory suggests strong labor markets produce conditions for high inflation, and Fed policymakers may feel they need to keep rates high for the time being. Despite the strong jobs numbers, American consumers are feeling an economic pinch from high prices. Inflation has fallen over the last year and a half, but prices on average are still 17% higher than they were before the recent inflationary surge. Voters in Illinois and Massachusetts filed petitions yesterday to remove former President Donald Trump from their GOP primary ballots over his role in the January 6, 2021 Capitol insurrection. Officials in Colorado and Maine have already banned Trump's name from primary election ballots under a constitutional provision barring anyone who, quote, engaged in insurrection or rebellion from holding public office. Trump's lawyers have argued that the constitutional amendment at issue does not apply to U.S. presidents, and on Wednesday, Trump filed an appeal of Colorado's decision to the U.S. Supreme Court. If the court decides to take up the case, its decision would apply to all 50 states. And a new report from Democratic members of the House Oversight Committee shows businesses owned by former President Trump received more than $7.8 million in payments from at least 20 foreign governments while Trump was in office. The report, released yesterday, is titled White House for Sale, and it cites China as the leading spender after paying more than $5.5 million to Trump-owned properties. Some of the other countries that made payments to Trump during his presidency were Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Kuwait, India, and Afghanistan. The report alleges that the payments violated the Constitution's Foreign Emoluments Clause, which bars the president and other federal officials from accepting money or gifts from foreign governments without congressional approval. Democrats warned that the total figure is likely larger, given that Republicans took control of the committee last year and halted the investigation. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 38 degrees and partly cloudy. In New York City, 34 degrees with fair skies.